Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwanga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name is Jim Hutchings, and we've got Mona Hill with us this week, which is great. And this week we welcome a friend of Human Rights Radio, Dan Lindsay, who passionately works for youth at risk and the homeless. His brother, Max Morin, and Max's wife, Debbie, and they have traveled from the north to talk about the very newly formed Committee for Future Generations and the recent Northern Forum on Nuclear Waste Management. We'll be exploring the reason the forum was created and the outcome of it today. So welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Thank you. Welcome, Max.
Thank you.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Yes, this is why we're here. This, by the way, is a really big deal. This started out about, 6 or 8 weeks ago? It's only been that short a time.
I think it was, it all came to a head May 9th.
About somewhere in the, around the beginning of May 9th. Or so. Yeah, and Dan and I were having a conversation from my end, from my perspective, over a steak night dinner.
That's how it all kind of happened. We were raising fund for a Road to Employment program, and I got a panic call from Max, and he had gone to a workshop or a conference dealing with youth up in Pinehouse, and it turned out to be kind of not that type of conference at all. It was, I guess it was a way for some of the local people there to, the duty to consult Aboriginal populations on the storage by NOMO of nuclear waste in the, Pinehouse area. So that was quite a surprise to Max, and he called me, and I think I called you, and we've been calling people nonstop since then.
Right, and everybody's gathering together to see what they could do about this. We first of all, I'll give you some definitions here. The UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People is the document in this particular case, I think, that has the most credence and the most weight in this issue about the storage of nuclear waste in northern Saskatchewan for the Indigenous people. NUMO refers to the Nuclear Waste
Management Organization.
Management Organization. So those are the two factors involved in this conversation.
And it's important to know that that organization is run, paid for, and managed by the nuclear industry. It's not a government organization.
Okay, so we're talking about a corporation.
Yeah, it is a corporation. You know, they try to make it arm's length, but the fact of the matter is, it is the corporation.
Right. So out of the conversations that occurred in the early days of May, what ended up happening was they ended up creating a nuclear forum for truth on nuclear waste storage. And there were people from all over Saskatchewan that attended this on June 2nd. It took about 3 weeks to put this together. It was held in the Valley View School Gymnasium in Beauvale, Saskatchewan. The keynote speaker was our resident Saskatchewan expert on nuclear energy, Dr. Jim Harding, who was a retired justice studies professor and author of Canada's Deadly Secret, 4 Decades of Leadership in Peace, Justice, and Environment. And the topics that were discussed at this forum were, what are the risks and benefits to Northerners regarding nuclear waste storage in the hard rock bedrock of northern Saskatchewan? Number 2, is there a committee representing Northerners? And if so, who are they? How are they appointed? And what is the protocol for representation? And how are they being held accountable to the people? How are they getting paid? And number 3, what constitutes duty to consult, as is mentioned in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People? And what communities are presently being consulted? Why is a heavy-duty steel bridge being constructed north of Paranac? And we will talk about that and see if you found any answers to that. And who has a final say on whether or not nuclear waste should be brought to Saskatchewan? So from out of those questions and out of the development of this forum, an organization was created called the Committee for Future Generations. So this is the committee that people have come together to talk about these issues. And the mandate of it is to obtain complete transparency on the issue of nuclear waste storage from the federal government, the provincial government, NUMO, which is once again the Nuclear Waste Management Organization, Bruce Power, Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations, and the Métis Nation of Saskatchewan. So this is basically, in a nutshell, how everything got started. And then...
That was Debbie's fault. She started all this.
Debbie, let's talk about this. Why did you think this was so important to get this going?
Because very few people are aware. Even half the teaching staff of Valley View School was not aware of the possibility of nuclear waste coming to our province. And that's when we really became shocked, because we thought, here are teaching professionals, we're in the business of education, and we haven't even heard about this yet. So we started talking to people from other communities. People in other communities weren't aware of the possibility, let alone the risks associated with it.
And consequently, there were people from Beauvel, La Loche, Buffalo Narrows, Ile La Crosse, Canoe Narrows, Turner Lake, Pinehouse, Paternac, and LaRonge, Prince Albert, Saskatoon, Lloydminster, and even Regina. There were Northern Mayor elders, women, and youth in attendance. Apparently the youth presence was pretty strong, wasn't it? And those people all came together at this forum to talk about possibilities, to talk about what's going on, to find out what's going on, to be educated, to be informed, and have their voice heard, right? Okay.
Yeah. And that was Debbie and Max, and it wasn't just Debbie and Max, but other people from other communities got together, and it was to find out what does this all mean, mm-hmm. because it seemed, now that we look back at it. You know, goes back to the end of 2009. You know, FSIN was given $1 million by NOMO. The Métis Nations was given $1 million, if not $1.5 million, from NOMO. And it's now 2011, and the people on the street, the people on the reserves, the people in the Métis villages, we're not hearing about it. So there's, you know, money being passed around. For duty to consult, I would imagine, or the beginning of that process, and nobody that I think that matters, you know, the families, the mothers, the children, the youth, the elders are actually being consulted, and the ones that are seems to be kind of selected, and they're only being given one side of the story.
I just want to relate back to the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Article 18 states that Indigenous peoples have the right to participate in decision-making matters which would affect their rights through representatives chosen by themselves in accordance with their own procedures, as well as to maintain and develop their own Indigenous decision-making institutions. Is this what happened? Because it doesn't sound like it was, or am I missing something?
I can give you my perspective, Mona.
Sure.
But first, I just want to clarify who I really am. I was born in Beauval and of Métis origin, French and Cree. And I was born and raised there, and I went on to secondary school. But eventually, I winded up with the RCMP and doing 27 years police service altogether, 24 with RCMP and 3 with tribal policing, but still under the umbrella of the RCMP. So 27 years, and And I decided to put policing behind me 4 years ago. So now I've been working with youth in my community, considered to be an elder. I'm 54 years old. And what happened was I was invited to Pine House to attend an elder youth conference, and we've had some tragedies that happened with our youth, losing our youth due to alcohol, drugs, and suicides, motor vehicle accidents, and they wanted to discuss ways to try and prevent further tragedies from happening, and that was my understanding. So I attended and brought a young person with me, and as was asked of. And after 2 hours of pouring our hearts out, sharing in a talking circle that was in session, the facilitator from Pine House all of a sudden wrote duty to consult on the flip chart. And I was wondering, well, I don't know what that means, but I can ask when my turn comes. But and then all of a sudden, NWMO was written on the flip charts too, and the topic all of a sudden went all about NWMO, Nuclear Waste Management Organization. They're talking about values, and they're stuck. They've worked their steps for the community, and they're stuck with values, and they have to, in order to move ahead, they got to have opportunity or vision. And they said, NWMO is our vision, our opportunity. We got to seize our opportunities. And when they started talking about NWMO, I just wanted to say, I saw three elders, well, it was more like 10 elders from Pine House got up and broke the circle, walked out of the room. And another elder from Keno Narrows walked out. So 11 elders walked out, left maybe about a handful of us sitting there. And I stayed listening, and they're telling us that there was a provincial committee representing Saskatchewan, a panel of elders from Saskatchewan, and I found out they're all from Alacross. And they're telling us a second facilitator walked in, and they introduced themselves. I'm not going to say names, but they said, we're both on salary from NWMO, and if I wasn't working for NWMO, I would have to move away from Pine House, both of us do, and get jobs in the city. So this is our job, you know, we're hired, we're on salary with NWMO.
So were they hired by NWMO to quote unquote represent the indigenous population of the north?
No, these guys are to represent Pine House.
Pine House only.
Yeah, but
okay.
there is also a provincial committee.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say names.
Okay.
But the first thing they say is the government tells us we have beautiful rock here, no cracks, no crevices, no plates, and I'm still listening, and anyway, when it was my turn to speak, I asked why, you know, what, who, where, well, all the five W's, and I was pretty stunned, and it turned out I started asking questions, as it turned out, I was insulted by one of their elders that's representing Pine House. Criticized me for bringing a young person here and hurting him by poisoning his mind by what I was saying. And then I guess the meeting was over. The elder that came down from Alacross and Jans Bay and myself were asked, and the one from Kennel Lake, were asked to stay overnight to carry on conversations next day. I said no, and the other elder said no, so we all left Pine House that evening, and I was upset, and I met Debbie on the way because I didn't know I was going to be invited overnight. And before the talks had started, I had called her to bring me my sleeping gear in a tent, and I was going to stay. But the way the meeting, the healing circle turned out, was broken, and and then because of that topic that was brought up, I had questions that weren't really being answered. So I was upset, and I met Debbie on the road, and I told her I'm upset. Let's just turn around, go home, and we'll talk. Mm-hmm. And from there, I started receiving some phone calls from Pine House. They had heard what happened, and there was concern raised because I had went to Beauval monthly town meeting and gave a verbal report that same evening, and kind of put the word out. So there was interest there. So on May 10th around there, we decided to host a community meeting, an informational meeting. It wasn't decided then to start up a committee, but as the meeting turned out, on May 16th, six people from Pine House attended, and one of them was the junior mayor, who's 15 years old and a really intelligent kid, very well spoken. And we had an attendance, I forget how many we had, Debbie, was there? There was over 22 people in attendance, that's including the six from Pine House, and the consensus was to form a committee so we could stay organized, and our mandate was to educate people and wake them up to know what's going on in their backyard. And that's still our mandate. We want to let people know that Nuclear Waste Management Organization is in our backyard, throwing millions of dollars around, jobs,
okay,
and economic recovery for the North, which it's never had. People work and live paycheck to paycheck, mm-hmm. just like anywhere else.
You mentioned informed consent and duty to consult earlier. Would there be people who maybe would think that this was being done? You know, Article 19 actually does refer to that in the Declaration on Indigenous Rights, that states shall consult and cooperate in good faith with the Indigenous peoples concerned through their own representative institutions in order to obtain their free, prior, and informed consent before adopting and implementing legislative or administrative measures that may affect them. So what I'm asking is, would that have been construed as there was consent?
Well, there's that. That's Pandora's box. What was it? Manhattan Island was traded with one native fella for a handful of beads. And
okay. That
was duty to consult. And so, you know, what it was, duty to consult, to take six guys out for dinner and have a chat, and you're now informed, and we go ahead with it. And especially, you know, when it comes around any type of resources anywhere in Canada, that's a very contentious issue. Now, do you notify, give $1 million to FSIN, and that's duty to consult? Or to the Métis Nation people, is that duty to consult? Or on something of this magnitude, is it something that every person, every citizen of every First Nation and every Métis person should be totally informed of both sides of the story? As far as we're concerned, every human being in the affected area should know the risks and the benefits of anything, and that's duty to consult, even to the point of holding a referendum.
I was going
to
say
that would be duty to consult. Yeah. And there's a lot of Native people, you know, First Nation on reserve, and Métis people that share that view, that you just can't take it to a handful of people in a backroom deal and make something, especially when those people don't even live up there. It's not their backyard. So that is a big, huge issue. And I think through the work of, you know, Debbie and Max, that this will come down. When it comes down to that duty to consult, they're not going to be able to do use any of these backroom little chats that they've had, because that was really exposed at the forum.
Yeah, and we don't get into that too.
And later that, you know, it's not the teachers, it's not the mothers, it's not the fathers,
right.
Even the mayors were in the dark.
Okay. Debbie, you had something you wanted to add to that.
I think our government needs to hold NUMO accountable as to what they consider informed and willing consent. The question was specifically put to representatives of NUMO who were in Pine House at a local meeting. One of the people that came down to our first meeting on this from Pine House said, she specifically asked, because the NUMO rep said, oh, no community will be forced into doing this. We will have willing consent. And so she raised her hand and she said, how will you measure that? And the reply was, first we'll go door to door, getting people's yes or no. For those people who there's no answer at their door, we'll go back with that list and we will phone them and get a yes or no. And already this lady from Pine House, her eyes were just rolling, because she thought, okay, what question are they being asked? Do they understand English? And then when you phone them, who's answering the phone? Like, so the whole, you know, informed and willing consent sounds really good.
And how are they planning on informing them about nuclear waste?
They're getting
They get one side story. They get their sugar-coated. And we even have their flip charts that they had at a meeting in a hotel, which they threw in the garbage, and it then become public property, where it says the information will be sugar-coated in their own handwriting.
Really? Is that right?
Yeah, 6 pages of a NOMO meetings flip charts. And so we had a good laugh about that. It was like, thank you very much. But to get back to the whole thing is the whole duty to consult, and I'll be real quick here, is the whole thing, this isn't even should be considered, because what you have is NOMO, who is paid company agent or whatever you want to call it, of the nuclear industry. We have Cameco. We have the uranium mines up there, and we have Cameco. This is nuclear waste coming from Ontario, which is Bruce Power, which one of the major shareholders is Cameco. So this is just, you're having the fox guard, the hen house. And this was the Harper government when they first came in that allowed this to happen and gave them permission that the nuclear industry can negotiate directly with First Nations and Métis communities or any communities. And it's just, the whole process is just totally, it's not even inherently wrong or evil. It's just corrupt. How can you have, like, all the companies involved, Bruce Power, Cameco, NOMO, they're all the same people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, all right? Because you were fair enough during your forum to present NUMO information, because apparently they refused to attend the forum. So you did present some videos or some information that they had, as well as other information about why nuclear waste would not be a good idea up north, which I thought was pretty fair when I heard about that. Now, to play devil's advocate, Max, earlier you brought up economics. Some people might think that this would be a really great thing because it might present some economic stability in terms of creating the opportunity to have jobs, construction jobs, and then in turn maybe new housing, maybe some more money for education. What's your take on that?
I can't see that many jobs. What kind of jobs are there going to be once the, what do you call that?
The storage facility?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Once that's all dug up and fixed up, what jobs are there really. There's trucking that's going to happen from Ontario.
And we want to talk about that after the break.
Yes.
Trucking.
Through Manitoba, Saskatchewan, all our roads. So there'll be trucking jobs.
Okay.
But I can't really see what, how the North or even the province is going to be compensated for the risk. For the risk of our watershed, since we've started, we've had response from farmers from the south,
okay.
Moose Jaw, as far as Moose Jaw.
And we'll talk about that when we come back from our break. Please stay and join us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Human Rights Radio. I'm Mona Hill, and I'm here with my co-host Jim Hutchings. And our guests today are discussing nuclear waste management in northern Saskatchewan. We have Max Morin, who is not the mayor of Illacrosse, is it?
Yes.
And Debbie Morin, his wife, and Dan Lindsay, Max's brother. We're discussing the results of the Northern Forum for Truth on Nuclear Waste Storage. And before the break, Debbie was talking a little bit, what was it, about, where did you want to go with that, Debbie? I'm trying to remember what you were talking about. We were going to go back to it.
Well, actually, the way Max ended off talking about, you know, the big question mark over what NUMO would have us believe is this is the greatest economic opportunity.
Right.
Now, you want to have maybe a few jobs, and what are you sitting on top of? A powder keg doesn't even begin to describe it. This is unprecedented, and Saskatchewan people are being used as guinea pigs. There's nothing to compare. Over 2 million spent nuclear rods all being put in one place. This is not in this side of it is not being presented to the people. According to NUMO, it's safe. One of the reporters that attended the forum, because NUMO did not attend, he went back to work and he did his homework. He called Michael Krzank, I'll say his name, because it's in the paper, it's public knowledge. So the Meadow Lake Progress reporter got a hold of someone from NUMO and asked them, in, you know, to describe NUMO's perspective on the safety of this nuclear waste storage facility. And he actually compared it to a natural uranium deposit below Cigar Lake that's been there billions of years. We've never found radionuclides on the surface of Cigar Lake, so it must be safe.
And to add to that, and that's the type of answers that we get. And this is what I call the sugar-coated thing. And it's like, we all know, or not everybody knows, but there is natural radiation all around us every day. You know, it is part of our environment. And this has been a misconception. They say, well, you know, we're the fourth largest producer of uranium, so there should be a moral and ethical reasons why we should take back the nuclear waste. And my answer to that, it just sounds absurd to me. It's like I think we only have a few actual gasoline refineries in Canada. Most of them are down around the Gulf of Mexico and Texas and stuff. Is when those companies take back the emissions from our cars, and when the coal-fired plants take their emissions out of the air back to their coal factories, and Dow Chemical takes back all the toxic chemicals that are going into our sewer systems, well, then maybe we can have that discussion. But until then, it just seems kind of another crazy way of trying to use that term, sugarcoat the information. And the same thing about jobs. You know, if anybody's been up north, I don't know how, 60 years we've been in the uranium mining, 70 years, long time now. And the roads were all supposed to be paved, and everyone was supposed to have new houses and jobs and tables and chairs then. Well, that still hasn't happened in all this time. Yes, where Max lives and my adopted mom lives in Beauval, a large portion of that village, their jobs are dependent on mining. And this isn't about mining. This is about nuclear storage. So it's the same old promises, and it goes in about what I call abusing indigenous people to put all their garbage on reserves or into Métis communities, because they know it's not safe. They got to get this stuff out of Darlington. It's right next door to Toronto. We just had what happened in Japan. It has to go.
Why Saskatchewan? Why not anywhere else in Canada?
Well, I see, and this is where we get to the politics, and I've even, people didn't like the word targeting Saskatchewan. Well, we are being targeted because we're the last place left. Quebec, which has nuclear reactors and has nuclear waste, they have nuclear waste, so they cannot ban nuclear waste because they have it. That makes sense to me. What they did, all three parties, and unanimously, they passed a legislation that they would not allow the importation of nuclear waste. So that basically means Quebec, we have nuclear reactors, we have nuclear waste as a byproduct, and we're going to have to deal with that. Ontario, they haven't gone that far, but they've already said, they don't want it, and they want to get rid of it. Manitoba, thank goodness somebody's got, some brains. They've just totally outright banned it, period. The other thing that I don't think they've done, and we're going to approach their government, is to ban the transportation of said nuclear waste through their province to try to head it off from coming to Saskatchewan. Because this nuclear waste is not a matter about the North. This is the same old way that they do about divide and conquer, cause internal family to fight, and First Nations and status and on-reserve, off-reserve, and Métis. This is a Saskatchewan-wide issue. This isn't an issue affecting the North. This isn't a First Nation or Métis issue. They're a little bit more in touch because they're going to be sitting on top of it. They'll be the first ones affected. But all this nuclear waste has to drive through the Trans-Canada Highway, all through Ontario, all through Manitoba, and all through Saskatchewan.
And how many vehicles?
Well, an estimated on the count, I think it was 7 or 8 trucks a day, 24/7 for 20 years. That's just to transport the waste that's been acquired in the last 40, 50 years. And I forget how many tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, rods that are still being produced yearly. The other thing, and this is my point too, is we have this great thing about called NAFTA. And this goes, back to the Conservative government again. That once we have this place in operation, we are now going to, because they've basically banned this in the United States, they've spent $13.5 billion over 20 years on Yucca Mountain installation. doing the same thing, drilling the hole 500 meters down, and then they realize it ain't safe, and they're not. They shut it down after $13.5 billion. Taxpayers' dollars, too. Of course, remember, taxpayers are paying for all this, and they've shut it down. So it's astronomical numbers that have come out of the United States. So we would be the storage spot for that, too.
For North America.
And the reason I personally believe, because, and I don't mean to sound callous, and I don't want to insult anybody, but if something like happens, like in Japan and stuff, what are we looking at? The population in northern Saskatchewan, you know, in the immediate area, maybe 20,000 people, and they're First Nation and Métis people. So what are we going to bitch about? It's not downtown Toronto, and that infuriates me so much, because it's the same old age old last 100 years. If we're going to build a dam, we'll flood out the native land. If we're going to put nuclear waste, put it on Indian Métis land. And that's what it comes down to. Because we had one of the elders from Nomo up there saying it's $24 billion. And I don't know if any corporation in the world looks to give away $24 billion. In fact, as far as I know, they're out trying to figure out how to get $24 billion. So if this was a great deal, they'd be doing it in their own backyard. And there was actually somebody on, because we now have on the committee site, we have email and that, saying they should store this stuff next door to Upper Canada College. You know, the bedrock's the same. It's the same thing. And that's what it comes down to, is a Canadian shield.
Right.
So the way the
right.
Canadian shield goes, right?
Right.
Yeah. So Quebec's out, you know, banned it. New Brunswick won't take it at all. They've come out and said, not a chance. They have nuclear reactors. Saskatchewan has chosen not to have nuclear reactors, so we don't have a nuclear waste issue.
Right.
So why should we be taking the nuclear waste for, you know, all of Canada and the United States and that was another thing that was on the flip chart. It was a dash, a point, and I loved it. And it said, the USA has agreed to buy foreign waste. So when you start putting the pieces together, because you want some clarity and transparency, we're not even really talking about a nuclear waste storage facility. In fact, what this is, and again, we got to remember, Bruce Power, Cameco, they're all the same people, right? Same company. This is a nuclear waste processing facility. We might be storing it for 25 years. These are not to be capped off. These are to have access to the nuclear waste so we can take those rods, process them, remove the plutonium, and make MOX fuel. So that's the real issue, which is even more highly dangerous than a nuclear waste. This is how accidents happen.
Max mentioned Watershed earlier, and you've also mentioned that there were people from Moose Jaw at this meeting. And Dan, earlier you said this is not just a northern issue. This is a whole provincial issue as well as, you know, sort of a national issue. How does Watershed come into play into this in terms of the rest of us when you've got bedrock? Talk about that.
And it still leaks. It's still water, still goes out. And, I'm not an expert. I can't say it takes 5 years for the water from up north to get to Regina. Actually, we have provincial people that could tell you how long that water takes to travel down here. And radiation, a lot of it, there's some of it that is water soluble. Mm-hmm. And it will form blue and goes through the aquifers. That's just, you know, a leak underground. The thing that gets me there is, you know, they're guaranteeing that it's always safe for 100,000 years. Well, the radiation lasts, you know, 10 times longer than that. And going back to the job things, you know, all these big steel, they're saying, 1 foot wide thick steel containers, they'll be in and transported in. Well, they aren't going to be made here. They're going to be made at Darlington. So there's no jobs making any of these containers coming to Saskatchewan. The trucking, I would be surprised if they actually had private companies, but they might have, you know, trucking this stuff. But the tonnage, the weight of nuclear waste and nuclear, you know, yellow cake, is incredibly, it's the heaviest, and I'm sure the right, you know, is it a metal or a mineral, or it's one of the heaviest things in the world.
It's a basic sludge, isn't it?
No, yellow cake, when they make yellow cake, they can only, a 45 gallon drum, they can only fill it a quarter away. with yellow cake. That's how heavy it is. You can't fill it up. You know, you can't move this stuff. I think it's 800 pounds. It's incredibly heavy.
That's so, what you get when you process a uranium.
That's when you process the ore that then goes out to get processed, you know, for the nuclear fuels. And that's done here in Saskatchewan. We do export the yellow cake, which still, again, isn't nuclear waste. You know, it's just one step of many on the way. So these trucks are incredibly heavy. So who has to pay for the highways? We can't even keep the potholes filled in our roads as it is. So can you imagine having this kind of traffic, which is like, I don't know, like the tonnage is just beyond me, coming down these roads all the time. While the province tax, you know,
what are the dangers of accidents? And
well, there's always accidents.
In
and that's my,
of
one of my things. Can you tell me one activity, let alone industry, or one activity in the history of human evolution where we haven't had an accident? There's not one business sector, there's not one company, there's not one activity even as human beings, even going out, walking down the stairs, you slip and fall and break a leg, that's an accident. Everything that a human being's ever been connected to has always had an accident to it. And what, say it's not going to happen in my lifetime, so it's okay? You know, we have a way in our belief system, we talk about seven generations, and it's almost become a catchphrase now. Oh, look forward seven generations. We're talking 7,000 generations. That's what we're talking here, is 7,000 generations. And it's just an abuse of Indigenous people. And the people that, you know, sit on the NUMO board, there's some pretty big rollers. This is a big corporate, intentionally targeted. Harper changed the rules that you can now negotiate. It's criminal, basically, what's happening. And to stumble upon it by accident, if we were having proper consultation, they would be holding forums. They would have newspaper articles. They would have pros and cons. This is, you know, Debbie and Max in the committee is doing, here's the pros, here's the cons. You have questions, let's find the answers, then make an informed and transparent decision. So that's the whole point of the committee, and Debbie's right. Working 20 hours a day, because this has gotten blown way out of proportion now. You're getting emails from out of province.
I was going to ask you, Deb, if you wanted to touch on the response since this meeting and since the committee. I've got the information here that at the end of this forum, there was basically a vote, wasn't there?
A resolution
was made. Do you want to talk about that and then talk about where the committee is going and what kind of response that you've received since that time? And we've probably got about, 10 minutes left, Jim?
Yes.
Okay. Go.
Okay, once again, representation at our forum was from 12 northern communities, 8 southern communities. And after 4 hours of hearing both sides of the issue, and we actually had over 30 people signed up that wanted to speak, and we didn't have time for that. It could have been a whole day forum. A resolution was put to the floor to send a strong message to our provincial government to legislate the ban of nuclear waste storage and nuclear waste transport into, out of, and through Saskatchewan. We are taking that resolution to the legislature today. We're in Regina. The government has to get off the fence on this and do their duty. Their elected duty is to protect the people that put them in power. And it's common sense. There are some people that are saying, we don't even need to hear the other side of the story. We know this is bad. And you know what? It's the youth that are leading us. And I'll turn that over to Max now, because he's dedicated his life to working with youth.
I'm really thankful that this committee formed. And as Debbie said, It is youth-driven. And there's two guys on the committee. Three, actually, with the junior mayor. And it's all ladies out of the 21. And our committee has grown. And I got to thank the committee for how dedicated they are. Debbie has been a strong leader because we always sometimes have to remind ourselves or remind each other the youth are the ones that are important. They're the ones that are going to have to live longer than we do.
Future leaders.
Yeah. And their children and children and children. And I don't think it's right for us to impose something this big, this dangerous, that'll destroy our water. My son, my youngest son, he's 19 now, asked me when he was 7, Dad, are we going to have water in the future? I said, yes, but I don't know how good it will be, you know. So it's up to us now to listen to our young people. And our elders, we have to stop the abuse Nemo is doing to our elders. They're bringing elders to the front, but they're not really educating. They're sugarcoating everything. Basically, the question they're asking the elders is, do you want your youth to heal from drugs, alcohol, suicide? The elder will say yes. And the hidden question is, do you want us to store nuclear waste in northern Saskatchewan?
We'll build your rec center.
I see it. And we'll build your arena and your youth center. And how's that? Here's a list. Write down your...
Yeah. Knee.
That's exactly what happened
in Pinehouse.
What do you call that? Christmas list or wish list? And that's not right. It isn't, you know. Yes. This is not against mining. This is, yes, it's been proven that nuclear energy is clean, but we're talking about nuclear waste here. This is poison. This is toxic. This is going to kill the watershed. Farmers from down south are talking to me now, and they're saying that's going to destroy our watershed. Saskatchewan, common sense here, Saskatchewan's known as the wheat pool of Canada.
The bread basket.
So, yes, I'm an advocate for youth and elders. I may not be old enough to be an elder now, but I am an advocate for these groups and everybody in general. I think people need to be educated as to the risks. Everybody that's living in Saskatchewan, if the animals could read and listen, if we could communicate with them, we should be advising them of the risks too, you know.
That's a good point.
And if I can interject, you know, because before I came down here to work in Regina, I was living in Beauvale, there's a whole lot of people that do live off the land still in that area, Pinehouse, Beauvale, all across the north. There's trapping, our family traps. My adopted mother, how old's mom now?
84.
Every summer drives out and harvests a year's worth of blueberries. Still
and
at
cranberries.
84.
And cranberries.
Still, so all the berries. The fishing. The winter up there. You know, it's commercial fishing. So that there's the fishing. There's the trapping. There's the hunting. People live off the land still up there. Like, for real. Not...
And trapping.
Not Jack London storybook. People are actually, if they don't have that, they go hungry. Because as a province, and it doesn't matter what government we pick, we've ignored the North for far too long when it comes to economic development. and traditional economic. We, you know, Beauval used to have a blueberry processing plant. We could put a blueberry processing plant. We don't need nuclear waste for jobs. We could have the wild rice that's happening up there. There's some First Nations that have depots. There's some private depots for very, very little money when in the scope of what government spends on money. We could bring in blueberry processing. We could bring in wild rice processing. There's other things that we have to look at that, you know, the price of alcohol, for one. You know, you get a bottle of whiskey in Regina, it costs you the same in Beauval or Pinehouse. But if you want a jug of milk, it's double the price. They subsidize alcohol to the north. Why aren't we subsidizing healthy foods, milk, things, and medicines? So the government, this is a wake-up call, because what's happening now, this issue is not just a Native issue, First Nation, on, off, reserve, or Métis. This is uniting non-Native, conservative farmers with on-reserve people, with Métis people, with NDP people, with Green Party people, women, children, elders. This is all-encompassing. And just before we run out, they are planning on, the committee is planning on doing a walk. We're still at basic, where we'd like to come from Pinehouse all the way here to Regina. And that's just in the very beginning planning process. And we don't know of all the information on that, but we are going to be bringing a petition, and we hope for tens of thousands of signatures along the way to bring it to the government, because this is, and it's not even a Saskatchewan issue, this is a national issue.
Right.
Why should Canada, and it happens to be Native and Métis land in northern Saskatchewan, be the dumping ground for the world's nuclear waste? Because nobody wants it. And in the declaration, as you were saying, in Europe, the toxic waste, which does include nuclear waste, I'm not sure if they're doing it, but we dump it into Africa out of Europe. We transport it and dump it into Africa. So this is not just happening here, it's happening around the world, and it's only happening to Indigenous people.
Debbie. Oh, Jim, have you got an announcement to make? Okay, we'll wrap this up in a few minutes. We've got a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to end with Debbie. I want you to tell us, if someone out there is listening to this and would like to get in touch with the Committee for Future Generations, would like to sort of connect with you about what Dan was talking about a future walk, about what they can do to get involved in this issue, how do they go about doing it, and how would they contact you, and what are you looking for from maybe other organizations or individuals even?
Find or form a group to organize to get your message out in your community. The Nuclear Waste Management Organization is counting on our silence on this. So in every community, my 97-year-old grandma lives in Kelleher. She didn't even have to hear 5 minutes of this, and she said, nobody here would want that. This is a farming community in the south. Organize. Get together as an individual, as a group, as a community. You can email us, communityforfuturegenerations@gmail.com. We will have a petition shortly. As Dan mentioned, we're organizing a walk later this summer, and we're aiming for thousands of petitions. You can also on Facebook, search Say No to Nuclear Waste. That's our Facebook page. We have almost 500 likes on there. Can I give phone numbers?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and then we'll wrap it up when Jim will give his announcement. Go ahead.
Is that what you're
saying? Real quick.
Yeah. Okay. 865-9299 is Max's number. Mine is 288-7933. But communityforfuturegenerations@gmail.com is our email address.
And to clarify that, you can form a chapter for the committee, and that's what we're looking for. I don't know how many chapters we have now, but a Regina chapter, Saskatoon, and will be the umbrella for all the chapters.
Okay, now we're totally out of time, and we'll just say for info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to cjtr.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."